Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, the shark babe has such teeth, dear, and it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Maggie, babe, and it keeps it out of sight.
So welcome everybody to this latest episode of Macklin's Take. Apologies that we've been away for a couple of weeks. We came back with Joe Gallagher and Spencer Oliver, and then we've been engaged in all sorts of things really the last couple of weeks. So we are going to keep this as close to once a week as we can get it, but there might be the odd week where there isn't one, but it's definitely going to keep going, Macklin's Take. We really enjoy it. And today we've got a man who, unbeknownst to him, we've actually been chasing around for a bit because we see him at weigh-ins all the time and we just haven't quite got around to doing this. He's somebody that Macklin goes way back with, way, way back, isn't it? I think wasn't he in the opposite corner for your first amateur fight?
He was in the opposite corner to my first ever amateur fight. It was the Grand Hotel, St. Patrick's Day, 1994. I think it was Martin Bird was the kid. But I boxed loads of kids then. That era lad, a kid called Nathan Barsley, boxed him three times. Johnny Rovers, I boxed him twice.
Hickman, did you fight
Hickman? I don't know if I boxed Hickman.
You should have done, but you
didn't want to. There was a good few anyway. I mean, I think Wensbury at that time had the most carded boxers in the UK, didn't they?
Yeah,
definitely in the Midlands.
Yeah, we had a good 40 or 50. Strong squad. And Small Heath, who was you with then?
Small Heath,
and they had probably one of the strongest in Birmingham, didn't they?
So the guest is Errol Johnson, who's got fighters here, there and everywhere all the time at plenty of different levels. It's the Friday just after the weigh-in before Adam Azim against Santos Reyes. So his fighter this week is English middleweight champion Tyler Denny, who defends, he's a great story actually, who defends for the second time against Brad Paul. Should be a very, very good fight that. So just to take us back to the beginning, How did you get into boxing? You've been in it a long time now. How did it all begin?
Started when I was 10. I played football really. I was more of a footballer, and my dad took me to Wensbury, and I sparred within the first half an hour of my first session, and started boxing. I had about 57 fights, won 40. Didn't really take it that serious. I was playing football at a decent level, and then I had a nose operation, and they asked me to help train him while I was resting for 6 months. And I had a schoolboy champion who was probably about 3 years younger than me at the time in my first 2 months. So I just never looked back after that. And I did all my amateur courses. I had to lie about my date of birth and done them all.
Your old man was involved with Wensbury as well. Was he even there?
Yeah, he took me down, and there was a matchmaker there at the time, but within about 6 months he took over with the matching. Yeah. Never done boxing in his life, but took to it took to it like no tomorrow and could remember every boxer in the country, I think.
Every show I ever went to,
he matched everybody's.
And I used to go to all the shows with Pat Benson, you know, no matter where, even if I was boxing. I'd, you know, if anyone was boxing Smalley, I'd always go with him. Like, I was even helping, you know, handing up when I was probably 12 or 13 sometimes. But every show we went to, there was always someone that Errol had on the show. I remember the Gethins and Shaz and all them. You know, and then you'd be with, for me, then I'd be with all these lads coming through the championships. So I knew him really well. But, like, that, I remember thinking, when, like, how many fights did Gethin had? He must have had, like,
Martin, you're talking to Martin. Yeah, well over 100. Muttley had well over 100, and the records weren't, because my dad would box them every week, like you did. Probably 50, just over 50-50 records, but didn't really make a difference once they went pro.
So, did you imagine that you would go into pro boxing as a trainer, or did you think amateurs?
No, I'd never got no real goals for it other than winning titles as amateurs. Like, they asked me to help out with do the further courses and go with England, but I wasn't. I like going out with mates and training the boxers. That's what I did, and played football still till I was about 35. And then a couple of years, just officialdom just started to get on top, and we had 1 year where just officials made some odd decisions, shall I put it, and I just went to my dad. Because I'd been asked to go about 2 years before with Mark Richards. You remember Mark Richards, Adrian Aldi? And I just said I weren't quite ready then. And then I had this group come through. There was Jimmy Beach, Stephen Chinnock, Young Muttley, Jimmy Gould. I'm going to miss somebody.
The Nightingales, they before?
They was just before, yeah. And Marcus Portman and the Gethins. And I just decided that they all wanted to go, so I just took a plunge. Worked alongside Dave Bradley, who got his promoter's licence. And the last two or three years in the amateurs, my dad weren't very well, so I sort of started doing all the matching as well as the training. I just got into it like that, and I'd got the same sort of memory as my dad. And so when I went professional, even though they got the licences, I was sort of matching. There was somebody who was doing the matching, but I sort of
advised
him. Helped everything out, and that's how I started to learn all the sides of management, promoting, training. But I still prefer the training of everything. But it's just when you're doing the lot, it's hard to get everything in.
it's a fairly familiar story for people we've spoken to on the podcast. In that, you just seem like, it seems like people just get sucked into it bit by bit by bit by bit, you know, just really just gets into your bones. And before you know it, you're doing everything, like you said. And that kind of memory side of it, John Peggs talks about the same kind of thing, that, you know, if you've got the brain for it and you can remember stuff about opponents, particularly because a lot of this is not necessarily pre-internet, but it's pre any of this stuff really being accessible on the internet. It is down to what you know. You do need to be a particular type of person, I think.
As well, Errol, is it a bit like, you know, if you're training fighters, you know, you'd love to be able to rely on someone to take care of the management. You'd love to be able to rely on someone that does the matchmaking. But when you're a bit not sceptical, suspicious, or you just want to make sure it's done properly, so then before you know it, you're doing it anyway. And you think, well, I might as well do it. You know? And then, you know, it's like that, isn't it, a bit?
Yeah, and I just get into it with them, and even from the amateurs, like we'd box all the time, but so I just copied my dad, really. It was just progression. It wasn't, we didn't look, they've got to win this, we've got to win this fight. Like, there's a lot about now, they've got to win every fight, otherwise it's the end of the world. It's about progression and being ready for the championships. So if they lost a couple, it wasn't the end of the, and it's shown sometimes in the professionals it can be the same. I think it's just TV that want unbeaten records and things like, such as Tyler's story. He drew with two journeymen early doors, but now he was working full time, but nearly all ours work full time. And we've had many a champ, like Martin Gethin was still working as he was British champion, he was still working as a builder. Like, do you know what I mean? And you wouldn't see some of these being able to do that.
I speak quite regularly, well, semi-regularly, on Twitter DMs with a guy called Steve Kim. He works in the American media. He's got his own podcast and everything. We were saying, you know, he said, fighters nowadays, they're overtrained and underfought. Because they're boxing so irregularly, they need these 10 and 12 week camps because it was so long since the last box. So they probably need 6 weeks to get them to the 6 week stage, you know, where they're at the base. It takes them 6 weeks of getting a base fitness and getting the weight down so that they're fit enough to start training the 6 weeks, which is, you know, sparring, whatever. But it's like, you know, and it's like that trying to being obsessed with protecting undefeated records.
And all the camps I've never heard of camps until, yeah. Especially for 4-3, 6-3s, like just be ready all the
just
time.
Be ready.
And like, I get it, once you've reached title level, yeah, you've got to be able to rest the body and bring yourself, you know, have the dates because you're at that level. But like when you're starting, you just want to need to box,
yeah,
and progress your career. And like, they should be on it all the time. They have a camp and then one 4 weeks off. Partying, and it's crazy, but you still got the mentality of it.
And when you think about it, when you were boxing amateur, and like say you're boxing all the time, like I remember boxing on a Thursday night and then boxing on a Monday, and it's like you didn't think about being fit, you just were fit, you know what I mean? You weren't thinking about your fitness, you're just
told,
fit, aren't you? You know, and it's like how better to be fit than to fight. You know, and I know you can't do that all through as you get older and become senior, and then especially when you turn professional. But you know, Buddy McGirt was world champion. I think he had 7 or 8 fights in a year when he was world champion. They weren't all title fights, but he'd take a non-title fight for less money. But he stayed sharp and busy, and he was still earning. He stayed in the gym, and then it's like you're fit, aren't you? You know, you're peaking. You'll have a week off, come off the peak a little bit, and then maybe ease back in. But you can't. This is like having like 2 months off doing nothing, like, and then you get bored.
Yeah, yeah,
you know. Getting to up to no good, because that's what happens. It did with me anyway.
No, yeah. Yeah, that's a podcast that we haven't really quite got round to yet. Kind of like Macklin's Nights. Yeah. I've been encouraging it for ages, but it's just not. He's not really
most
having
the
it.
Boxers,
no, yeah, no comments.
But yeah, I mean, Nassim, for example, I think he boxed 6 times the year after he became a world champion, and then 5 maybe, or then 4 and then 5, and then the activity kind of tailed off as he maybe lost his hunger a little bit. But just to kind of go back to the amateur side of it, I'm really interested in this, because last year I did some coaching down at the nursery at my local club at Newham. To my shame, I'm not doing it this season because I just don't have the time for it. I'm in awe of people who do that 4 or 5 nights a week, and I know they've got families as well. I just don't know how you do it, how you put that commitment in. It's absolutely amazing. But how soon can you tell, do you reckon, when someone walks through the doors for the first time, not how far they're going to go in the sport? Because it's about getting people in the gym and off the streets more than just as much as it is about producing any kind of a champion. But if someone's got something, how long does it take to kind of show itself to you?
Some you can tell naturally, but you never know that they're going to make it, because they've got to go through, especially in amateurs, they've got to go through many hurdles, women, drink, mates. They've got to go through a lot, especially if you'll find, like I had a kid who won about 6 national titles. You'd have said he's going to be a really good. He hit 16 and he just plateaued. He found women, he found, and he just plateaued and start, and then like the Martin Gethin, who slow, doesn't look like he's slowly comes through, sticks at it, and then comes through. Muttley had always got natural talent, but I was lucky if I got him in the gym once a week. So until he went professional, then he still took him till he lost his 3rd fight on a Sky show. He was half training, that it suddenly clicked. You've got something, but you need to train with it, and it's. For me, the professionals, but like the amateurs as well, but you can get away with certain things in the amateurs just because it's a fast and three rounds. But in the professionals, you've got to be super fit, otherwise you'll get found out.
That's just a given, isn't it?
Yeah, but you wouldn't. To some, though, they still think they can get away with it as they're going through, because some it comes easy to some. They think they can get away with things. I've noticed that on some boxers. They're doing well, so they start to do less. And then you get somebody like Tyler, keeps working harder and harder, and he was below them, and he comes through even at an age where he is now.
I think one of the most undervalued ingredients is consistency, perseverance in achieving, in anything. You know, sticking with it, going, you know, you have your losses, you have your setbacks, but to kind of keep going without losing that enthusiasm. You will get there, and you see that, like you say, some of the ones who maybe seem the most gifted, they get lazy, or maybe they can't handle a loss, so they can't, you know, their ego, their pride can't deal with it. Where, you know what I mean? But the ones who can and go back and work harder and knuckle down and use it to improve themselves, they're the ones that, you know, quite often are the ones who actually overtake the ones who had more ability.
Yeah, and like, because we've just set up. Our old gym moved out to somewhere new, so we've just set up in our gym a new amateur club about a year and a half ago, and I think we're up to about 50 boxes again now. and you can see a little bit, you can see little bits, even though I don't actually train, I might do an odd session here and there. You can see talent, and it's just how they progress when they go through, and how much they want it, really. You know what I mean? There's a lot of stuff out there nowadays, even more than back when you was boxing.
Yeah. And boxing's tough, isn't it?
Yeah. you can go on a computer all, you can mess about or go on a computer all day or train. Boxing doesn't alter much. I know they try to bring new methods and different. Still doesn't alter much.
You can't reinvent the wheel, can you?
No. So, and a lot of them don't like it. Yeah, it's too tough for them.
How would you kind of rate the popularity of it these days in terms of how many people are... It's really interesting that you say you've just opened that amateur section. Are you getting a lot of people coming through the doors? Is it in a good place to sport? Yeah. Because Spencer Oliver was saying to us the last pod we did that, as far as he can tell, there's never been more people coming to gyms now than he's known in his time, and you're about the same age, we all are. I mean, that sounds great to me. But boxing kind of, it is still, it just still feels quite underground a lot of the time, doesn't it? Because clubs don't really...
I think boxing will always have that, because there's some people that perceive it as there shouldn't really be a boxing. Do you know what I mean? It's always going to be difficult to sell to certain people. But numbers at the moment, and like you're getting the other combat sports manoeuvre, like kickboxing, there's a lot, I've never seen so many manoeuvring from kickboxing, even youngsters. Who start doing that and they're moving to boxing because they can see there's more opportunities in the boxing side than the kickboxing. That's how it looks to me. I don't really know about kickboxing.
I mean, it is a funny one because they always, you know, everyone says, oh, boxing's dying. But they've been saying that ever since I've been involved in boxing. But there's, I don't know, how many times has Wembley Stadium been sold out? Whiten Fury, Joshua, Povetkin, you know, or the ones, Cardiff, you know, the massive crowds like Canelo in Dallas banging out the Cowboys Stadium. Don't look that unhealthy.
No.
I know you don't get that every week, but you don't get Champions League final every week either.
No, that's exactly right. And you run some, you know, you've got a thriving small hall scene that you do with Black Country Boxing. We'll get onto that in a little bit. I mean, in terms of Birmingham, I always kind of feel like Birmingham's maybe a bit of an untapped resource in terms of the recognition it gets nationally, because I've been there quite a lot, and I know a lot of people through you mainly on the Birmingham boxing scene, and it seems to me like it's, you know, it's healthy, and you could argue that in recent times you can make a strong case that Frankie Gavin, when he was at his peak, is maybe the best amateur fighter we've ever had. And he's from Birmingham. I mean, when he was winning all of his stuff, did you notice a kind of increase in the uptake of boxing within the city at that point?
I don't know, you're talking to me, because I'm Black Country.
Do you know, Birmingham's a funny one. So, we spoke before about Gary Newbon, didn't we? We said, like, you know, when and Paddy Lynch and that. When Frank Warren came on the scene, I think it was like 1981 or around that time, I think the first British title fight he did was a guy called Steve Early against Clinton McKenzie. And also, I think the first big world title one he did was Pat Cowdell and Azuma Nelson, or Colin Jones and Don Corey. But they were, though, the NEC was the big venue back then, and Gary Newbon with ITV was a big part of all that happening. And the Lynches had a great stable at that time. They had like five or six British champions. Tony Willis, who else did they have? They had Costas Petru, Lloyd Christie. They had about five or six British champions, European champions as well. And they were kind of they did a few co-promotions with Frank Warren at that time, because he had the television deal. Obviously, he only had the few channels then as well. Terrestrial 2, he didn't have any of these bigger channels. But like, that was Birmingham at that time. You know, Eubank and Ben, the first fight was at the NEC. That was Birmingham that had got a lot of the big shows around that time, didn't they?
Yeah, because it was a used venue at the time. It's new venue, and they was using it quite a lot for a lot of the big fights, weren't they? For some reason, they've sort of manoeuvred away from, and they sort of always get told that they can't quite sell it out when they go to the old NIA, which is a good venue, a good position for the middle of Birmingham, and that's what we sort of get told every time. That, so I don't know, it just needs somebody in the area really to light it off again, really, I think.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So when did you decide to take the plunge and become a promoter as well as a trainer?
I sort of did it right from the start, but just not in name, because you had to wait 3 years for your licences. So, but as soon as my 3 years up, I got me trainers, then my managers, and then got me promoters and went straight into it, really. And then I've been mad ever since. I'm doing 20, 30 shows a season. So, it's fine, but it's getting a lot harder now. But I've got about 50 lads on my books. So you've got to try and keep them all happy and keep them busy.
I was going to say, where you are now is probably not where you thought you'd be. You didn't intend to, but it just happened, because if you get so many lads. And then you're trying to keep them busy. You think, well, fuck it, we'll do our own show. And then before you know it, like you say, you're training, you're managing, you're promoting. And it's just unbelievable that, you know, there's not enough hours in the day.
No. But like, it's my main goal is just to get them as far as they can and earn them as much money as they can on bigger platforms. It's not about making money on them shows.
Because we
lose a lot of the times, but it's about progression for them, really, and trying to, and if they work hard enough, they'll get there, and they prove once they get up to there, they can perform with them if they're working hard.
Yeah. But it's keeping things moving. It's like, so you Ludi Bella, who runs his Broadway boxing shows, this, I go back a few years when I was with him, and he was still was getting dates off HBO for Sergio Martinez or me against Golovkin or whatever. He'd get his dates if he got the right fight.
Yeah, yeah.
But Lou also had his series Broadway Boxing, which I think was on MSG Network Television. Now, I'm not absolutely 100%, but it was something like, I think Lou was paying 10 or 15 grand to MSG. He was paying for the airtime, but then he owned the airtime and he could sell adverts for sponsorship and different things like that. But Lou was happy if he broke even on a show, you know what I mean? Like, but then the way he would have looked at it, say he'd done 10 shows a year and he lost $10,000 on a show, so he was 100 grand down. But then, you know, if Sergio Martinez fights on HBO and gets 1.5 million and he's getting 20% of that. You know, they're, do you know what I mean? And he gets a few of those. Then he's making money. And actually the fact that he's running shows and staying in it, you know what I mean? He's dealing with fighters. He's signing fighters. He's building them up to 12-0, 15-0. He gets him in on an HBO slot. So even though he's losing money here, he's making it
in another position.
But the only reason he's in the position to make the money is because he's staying busy with the shows where he's losing money. So there is, even though it might seem like madness, why would you keep running shows to lose money? And he's like, well, I'm losing here, but because of this, I'm making over here.
Yeah.
One thing that was really noticeable during COVID was how many fighters you had on lockdown shows for Sky and I think also for Queensbury. But it just seemed to me like you were one of the main providers of boxers.
To be fair, it kicked up. I was probably on a plateau at that time, and it sort of kicked off. It's kicked off for us since then, really, and only gone one way, other than a couple of results. If you look into my results.
Well, Lennox Clark had a good win in Cumbria's champion, didn't they?
What sort of happened? I got a good stable. It was sort of on that mid-level where none of them was with promoters, but all in close positions. And I just went to them for them 3 months when it was closed. I just said, keep training. I said, keep training, keep on your weight. I says, because they'll want fighters. I said, but we're going to have to fight. We're going to have to go in fights. And to be fair, we did the very first fight was Beach on Frank Warren's show, beating...
You had a few in the fight camp at Eddie's.
Yeah, and then I had about three or four in fight camp. And then we just kept on taking fights. Lennox won while he was there. Zach had a good win while he was in there. Liam Davis won the English. Kane Baker had about two or three. I think Adam Harper boxed, Wellborn boxed, Beach, Rachel Ball beat Shannon Courtney, and then I started to get a relationship, and then with the promoters, and then I've signed a few with Frank since then, such as Nathan, there's about eight or nine, which has started to go quite well.
Yeah, it was really noticeable because I'd be researching cards and I'd just think, wow, there's another Black Country, another BCB boxer, and they were everywhere. And by the sound of it, yeah, I mean the way you managed to profit from that situation was because you stayed ready, you got everybody to stay ready, and they were all prepared to go into proper fights. And if you've got fighters like that, then the pandemic wasn't good for anybody, but those are the kinds of conditions that you want, don't you, really, across the sport? And we would want that all the time, but no, people were saying it would kind of persist after COVID, no easy fights, and it hasn't, has it?
Well, it's because there's a lot of people involved in this sport, isn't there? So at different levels, and it just manoeuvres back to the one good fight and the rest sort of are handpicked. As best you can, you try, but obviously they've got trainers, they've got managers, they've got people, lots of other people involved, and they're all looking after their own people, and they're not gonna let that happen all the time, are they? So it's just, but it was good. We really enjoyed it over that period, and we've sort of kept on that progression at the same time, really.
Being so involved in the amateurs would have given you a good I don't know what the word is. I suppose insight to a lot of the fighters coming through in the professionals. Because I know you went into the professionals, but you still probably kept your foot in the door a little bit with the amateurs. And it's like, maybe not on an official capacity, but like, I don't know, Zach Parker, you know, he's a brother. Yeah. Remember Lee Parker?
Yeah, yeah.
He went to a
professional with me, but there was
Who needed?
Yeah,
did
they, yeah. There was a medical issue, so he didn't get his license. Like, so
he was a good. You know, he was a good lad, he was.
Well, I got Zach because Dwayne boxed for me and he won 16 out of 17. And Zach used to come down about 15 or 16 sparring some of ours. And so he just...
Dwayne, the other brother?
Yeah.
I didn't know him.
He's the one in between. And there's another one who... I don't know if he's ever boxed, but he didn't box professionally or nothing. And look, Zach just continued through then. Zach started on small all. He boxed at Cannock Cannock.
Was he with you from the start,
yeah,
Zach?
Yeah, Cannock Leisure Centre was his debut. He boxed at Han Adam Harper's, Bill Tewkesbury, just because he weren't a massive ticket seller. So we just had to manoeuvre about until we met Neil Marsh, and he helped out and done a great job with him managing. And we worked together, and it worked well. And then his displays got him on the bigger platform. And just unfortunately, hopefully, he'll get rid of these injuries and be back.
Yeah. It's a hard slug, though, to small all, isn't it?
Very much so. Gives you a headache, especially when you get pullouts last minute, and it's hard. Or your biggest ticket seller pulls out with about 3 days to go. We've
heard
some ups and downs.
No, I bet we've heard some war stories from Peg, from John Peg, Steffi Ball, Carl Greaves. You're all doing the same thing, aren't you? I guess there's one fight I really remember that you put on. Wellborn Langford, British title fight, middleweight, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it was a brilliant fight. It was a brilliant fight. Yeah, and you can watch it online. There is footage of it.
I think it was fight of the year, wasn't
yeah.
it?
I think it won fight
did
of the
he,
year.
Did he get it? Yeah. It probably did.
How did you do that? Because, you know, there was no... You know,
Jason Wellborn, he got a couple of sponsors, and they asked me to find out what... Because I think just at that time, luckily... Tommy got the title, and he hadn't got a mandatory on him, and his contract with the promoter had just sort of levelled out, and he just become available at just that right time. They asked me to go and see Tom Chaney and Tommy and see if I could get it done, and they'd support Jason. So we come to an agreement, and then I went on to manage Tommy after that. As well, so
and then the rematch landed on Sky, didn't it?
Yeah, we dropped lucky that they wanted the rematch after it was such a good fight, and then we should have fought Efron, and then I got offered the world title fight, didn't I, on the Fury Wilder bill for the unification.
So what was that? He had a mad ride, Jason Wellborn, didn't he? Because yeah. I remember we did his fight against Marcus Morrison, and you could see why T. Morrison and Joe Gallagher and Matt Treem had chosen Jason, because
he was with Matt then.
Yeah, he was.
Seamus was screaming for him that night.
Oh, that's right. You weren't commentating, were you? You were watching, but he. It was one of my fights, so I remember looking at it, and he dropped down to. I think he'd gone down to welterweight or something insane, and he'd. Tried to stay on the weight for 2 or 3 weeks, he told me. He'd ended up losing to Willie Warburton, who was always one of my favourite away corner guys. And then, you know, he went up to middleweight. I remember talking to him during the week, and he said all the right things about, you know, I feel stronger now, I'm better than ever. And I thought, well, we'll see. You know, I hear that a lot from people, particularly when they move up in weight as they get older. But it all kind of started from there. And then when he signed to fight Jarrett Hurd, I remember just looking at it, just thinking, wow. I mean, how was that whole experience?
Oh, it was great. Went for 10 days. It was an amazing experience, really, especially for him and the team, really, because we never... I've been to a couple of things. It doesn't really... Boxing's boxing for me. I'm not that type of... So, but for the whole team and everything, it was great, great experience, and he made the best of it, really. Do you know what I mean?
But what I always think with Wellborn from that time with Marcus, isn't it amazing... Isn't it amazing what a bit of belief can do?
Yeah, definitely.
Do you know what I mean? Because that was the main thing, I thought, that changed him. He believed, he had enough weeks training, whatever.
Yeah.
And like you say, I remember me and Seamus went in to see him before he was fighting Marcus Morrison. And I remember saying to him, I said, listen, these think you're an easy touch. Yeah. That's why the picture. Yeah, but if you jump out there and fucking stick it on him and keep it on him and just, you know. And that's all he needed was the motivation. Yeah. And then we were like, anytime we'd land the shot, that's it, you're on him. Yeah. And you're just keeping him in the fight, aren't you?
Yeah.
And he you could see then, he realised, he broke,
the other kid's heart.
That's it.
Because he weren't expecting it. He was expected just to win, and that's, nobody tells them
exactly
that somebody's going to hit them back.
That's right.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Is there anything better than an away win? Because people say away wins are just the best.
Such as Lennox Clark. Like, he come into my gym, he'd had six white collar qualify. Yeah. It's probably from the pub. And I just built him up slowly and gradually. And like they give us absolutely no chance. To be fair, we get given no chance on a lot of our fights. And like Liam Davis, when he fought Leach, I don't think anybody in the room thought we was going to win, and except we did. And like, and we took Lennox, and I think Willie was beat on the scales. Like he just mentally didn't, he wasn't there for me. But and he's just come from nowhere, really. He's like a bit amazing, really. Like he'd never boxed amateur, never really boxed, been taught. And a few years later, he's British champion. I don't think he knows what he's done, really.
Yeah, that fight with Hutchinson was a real interesting one because, as you say, just two complete polar opposites. Someone who had just got no amateur background up against someone who'd won a world youth amateur gold but hadn't boxed as a senior. And that kind of always sets alarm bells ringing with me a bit. And, I mean, Adam Azim's the same. He didn't do any boxing as a senior. So there's still a lot to sort of find out.
I don't think Naz did either, did he?
No, hardly at all. I mean, some people could just...
He was a one-off at them years. Most, like, it's happening a lot now where all these kids are going at 18, 19 and they shouted out, he's multi this, multi that. And they definitely have, but... Until you've boxed senior, I don't see, like Kalazaki won three ABAs back to back at three different weights. Like it didn't stop him then going on to be world champion. I think there's a bit too much men there going over because just a different game at the different sport now. A little bit television runs it a little bit too in that format because they can see. A lot's to be made there now, where it probably wasn't there quite as much a few years back. Like, so you went through the process.
Yeah, I think nowadays they're a lot quicker to say you're the next big thing. Where you had to earn that a little bit years ago, didn't you? You know, because people were fighting more regularly.
Yeah, and you've got to be in a fight. Like, you've got to be in the Midland title fights. You've got to be in English title fight. And you knew that was great. When you get that, most of them are gruelers, unless you're an exceptional talent. Most of them are gruelers for everybody, as you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? British, they're hard fights, you know what I mean? Whereas if you go through the international route, you can slightly
handpick the
pick your route, you know what I mean?
I mean, Hutchinson was a big favourite in that fight, from what I remember, in the build up to the fight. I mean, when that happens, are you kind of. I guess you're probably pleased about that, are you? You know, because the attention's not on your guy, but you know what he can do.
I prefer it all the time, if I'm honest. Like, there's always pressure when you're favourite. Do you know what I mean? It's how boxers cope with all the different pressures. And when you just go in as the away fighter and nobody gives you a chance, there's no limelight on you. So you can just really go in and do what you want. And you know the one who's... is the own fighter, have got to deal with the pressures because usually they haven't lost a fight, and you find a lot of them when they do get beat, that's when their career decides where it goes, really. Some plateau and finish or never really get to that level again, or they come again and you'll see an improvement.
It can be the making or the breaking of someone, can't it?
Yeah,
that first loss.
Yeah.
Well, Tyler Denny, who we mentioned earlier on, who fights tomorrow night, it'll have happened by the time people listen to this, against Brad Pauls. He's another good example, isn't he? Because I was looking at his record a while ago and I saw those two draws and they would have felt like defeats because you're the home fighter. And whenever I see the home fighter get a draw against an away corner fighter, I think to myself that he probably lost. Because that's often the way. And I asked him today, I saw him at the weigh-in, there was a few little details I wanted to fill in. And I just said, did you ever think about packing it in at that point? And he said, no, but I did think about it after the first fight against River Wilson Bent. I mean, he's a really good example of someone who's had to get over that line. And he's not, you know, he's got greater ambitions now, but to get over that line to win the English, you know, he really did have to stick at it because he's been... not always, but mostly in those big fights in the away corner. Even last time when he was a champion, he was still in the away corner, really, wasn't he? against Brad Ray.
He's been all the way through, really. Like, I never used to manage Tyler, so it was one of my journeymen who drew with him in the early days. And also, I did the Midland title fight with him and Tommy Stokes, and he was the away fighter. Tommy Stokes was my fighter, and he beat Tommy. And that I got it totally wrong that day. And then when he come to us, that was through by COVID when he first come to us, because the gym sort of closed and the trainers had a couple of problems, so he just come over. And ever since he's dedicated, he trains really hard. He's never argued who I've come up with it for him to box, and everyone he's, since Sozay's, he's boxed everybody away, all been unbeaten, and he's beat every one of them. And hopefully he'll continue it tomorrow, and then we'll hopefully get a little bit of better things for him.
How many shows would you say you're doing on average a year now yourself, that you're putting on yourself?
At least. I've got five now till the end of March.
Yeah. Are they all round the Black Country area?
No. One's in Northampton. I'll do some down Torquay. I've got one there in May because I manage a few down there. I'll go to any area if I've got boxers there, and I've done them at Tewkesbury.
Tewkesbury, is that the way to Cheltenham?
Yeah, that's where Adam Harper's from.
Oh, yeah.
So, and if they can sell and they can do tickets, I'll have a go anywhere, like, to just move them forward and try and progress them. So, but probably the too many at the moment. I probably should do bigger shows, but obviously because they're all spanned all over the place, they want to box in their own areas and different things like that. So, but I do Wolverhampton, Birmingham, Dudley, Warsaw, Canuck, Stoke. I used to did all the ones for Nathan Heaney, Stoke, up until he signed for Frank. Like, he sold nearly 1,200 tickets at the King's Hall, and he could have sold more that day as well. And when he did his IBO Continental, it just went. And Nathan boxed on my first show at Bilston, because we lost Walsall Town Hall for a little bit. We ended up in this little banqueting seat in Bilston, and he made his debut and he sold about 60 tickets, and it just went, it just grew each time, and then it's just gone. He sells them off the, it's
but
not
that's
crazy.
The bread and butter promoting, isn't it? Building a fighter up to 10-0, 15-0, whatever, doing it locally, getting around the that's the graft, isn't
it?
Really?
Yeah, and it's hard work for us and the boxer. Like, the boxer's got just the same. He's got to get out there, sell the tickets, and no doubting there's a lot of them get told. Especially the first fight, everybody comes to see, and then the next fight they're down by half, and they don't want to tell you. They try and hide it and say they've sold this and that, and then last minute they go, oh, I've had a few pullets, and just the usual stuff. But sometimes it's not their fault. It's just people have come to watch them once, and it's just
novelty act a little bit.
They've seen it, and but boxing's not for them. And it's hard because it works against the grain, really, because you want them to get out there selling tickets. You can only really do that if you get amongst your friends and get out where the partying scene is a little bit. And so whereas the ones who live like an hermit, they can't sell a ticket. And it just depends on certain things. Like, you can get somebody who's hardly ever boxed, but he can sell 300 tickets. It's crazy sometimes.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
Yeah, it is, and obviously one of the massive appeals of Hatton was that he was out in Manchester, and that drew people to him. Heaney's amazing though, because I've covered him a few times, and that And I've seen some ring walks, but his is right up there. And I think it was that King's Hall ring walk that hit Twitter, that went viral, that really brought him to the attention of Frank, I'd imagine.
Well,
because
about everybody, I think, found me about it. So it was just crazy. And that was in, because that was the last show before COVID. And like, I suddenly had a few calls in COVID, and we actually signed the contract with Frank whilst in the them first 3 months of COVID. So he had to wait. I don't think he boxed then till... He didn't box all through COVID until the arenas was open again.
Yeah, no, I went to his... it was Telford in...
I think he did what? He might have done one, actually, behind closed doors.
But he boxed... He boxed,
he boxed box in, very well, yeah,
he boxed in Telford. Would have been June 2021, I think,
yeah,
on the card there. Yeah. Dubois was top of the bill, but Heaney was kind of top of the bill, really, because he brought all his Stokies with him. Not as many as normal, because it was limited to about 1,500. Well, they said it was, but I looked around that night and just thought, it seems like quite a lot of people for 1,500. But it was the first time I'd seen the ring walk live, and it's amazing. It's amazing, because everyone knows the words. He's got this little choreographed routine almost, he does, like when he's up on the platform. It's something else. And you saw that kind of grow, or you know, or organically, I guess.
Well, he did it from the very first, you know, when I think when he fought Tommy Stokes as well at King's Hall in a close one. And just before then, I think, in his first, as he stepped up, he started doing it regularly. You just don't think nothing of it, and it's just. But then when he fought his last one there, when he packed the place out, it was just. It's like the old place.
But it's kind of old school promoting, isn't it? With you've got no television backing, and you're just grafting on the ground,
yeah,
building, keeping the kid boxing in locally. Hopefully, local paper. Hopefully, the local radio or whatever come along and just probably word of mouth. A lot of it that they come. They've had a great night. It was good, and it just catches fire.
Yeah, definitely. It just. Never asked him how he does it, but he knows what he's doing. Like he's very good with all of them. He like when after he sets up the coaches from all. He sets it up from the. He's got this liaison with the football ground, because we keep going to Frank. Like we'd run about going to the football ground. He swears he'll do 10,000 plus there, and like that, and the football ground have supporting him, and I think they definitely could do them type of numbers. So we're just trying to push it that way, really, because he just got this connection with them, and like wherever they go, he gets on the coaches after the fight, thanks them all, goes around them all, and it's just and
they're on the journey with him, aren't they? I suppose that's what it is. You've got to get people on that journey with you, and he's done that.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. No, I've seen
at
it in
whatever
action.
Level.
Yeah, I've seen it in action, because that night in Telford, we all, the TalkSport team I was working for, we all repaired to pretty much the only boozer near the arena, and there were loads of his fans in there, and then he came in and he was still in his shorts and boots and with his wraps on. And that just, like, if you're one of the punters, you're gonna think that's amazing, aren't you? That like he hasn't even got changed and he wants to come, and he wasn't drinking himself, but he wants to come and have a chat and sit down with you. That is, you know, that's elite level kind of self-promotion, really, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. He sort of got this good link in with the fans, and he knows what he's got to do to keep it progressing.
Yeah, what'll happen as well with a lot of those fans, they've taken boxing wherever, and they all go down on the coach, or some drive down and stay in the hotel. Yeah. And they're all in the one hotel together, and they go to the fight, and they've got a ticket, and they're all buzzing. They've met him, so they know him, so they're a bit more invested. It's not just someone they haven't met. They do know him. They liked him. They're from where they're from. They know each other. They've met each other along the way. And it's like, they've had a great night. You know, he wins, everyone's buzzing. Yeah. They're in the hotel after drinking. Oh, great. You know, they form friendships. People that are meeting that were fans, you know, follow on the journey together, meet each other. And they become friends, and then they can't wait for the next one. And that's how it grows, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And look, they probably don't. They'd rather go there than watch Stoke at the moment. He'll kill me for that.
Well, I know him a little bit, so we'll recruit him for this one of these days. We're not going to keep you too much longer. These are quite difficult questions to answer, actually, off the top of your head. You know, it's like asking somebody what their favourite film is. But what would you say has been your kind of highest point in boxing up to this?
That's the question.
Up to this point,
you don't like answering, do you? Because you've been through many of them. So,
well, it's great if you've been. If this is hard to answer, that's great because it means that you know you've had a lot of high points.
Yeah, because we most of the time we come from. The second side of the, on most times, of the bill. So any win is a good, because all I want to do is win things. That's what I want to do. I like pitting myself against
and
beating them.
I bet some of them kids you had from school, their first ever schoolboy bout, seeing them through an ABA to win a senior ABA, literally going from the burn, you know. The
same,
they're unbelievable, aren't they?
Mutley I had from when he was 9, 10, yeah. Gething from when he was 10. Portman when he was from 9. It's good when you, because not everybody can say that.
No.
Not every trainer can say that they've had him from a kid. And
very few. Right. By Brendan Ingalls and that, there aren't many others that have him from 10 years old when they first walked in the gym and are then still with them in the professional career. There's not many nowadays that do that.
And also, what doesn't happen, even though I get all these champions, I still wouldn't get a top amateur walk in my gym and go, well, we want to train with you. Just doesn't happen. I have to bring them. That's why I've set the amateur club. I've said to the other trainers, we've got to set the amateur club up to bring them back through our own way again and produce again. Otherwise, because there's so many amateur coaches now going with their kids pro, there's that many trainers out there, it's like flooding now, so they're all keeping their own boxes. You're not going to get that influx of boxes coming to you, and like we've got a gap again now. Once this level's gone, we've got a gap and you've got to start again, like I did from Mutley's. I had to regroup and start again, and that's what the shows are for, to bring them through and get there, because you're never just going to get past kids, because it just doesn't, for some reason it doesn't happen.
Well, I suppose the Black Country isn't the most glamorous of places to set up camp, is it? That's saying Birmingham's any better, but the wild card of Florida or something, or New York, it's a bit more appealing.
we don't miss about in training either, so I think when they come to us, some of them go and the sparring's quite. We don't spar loads, but we spar hard when we got to spar and ready for fights. And so, I don't know, but it just doesn't happen that way. So you just got to live with it and get on.
And if you had, we all have quite a few moments, I think, whatever we're doing, where we think, oh God, fuck this. But have you ever had one where you've thought to yourself you might mean it?
What, finish?
Yeah.
No, you have the odd days. You can have an odd week, really, but it's more to do. It's not to do with the box. It's more to do with the shows side of it, where you can get you down hard, being hard, and having a bad one. If you're having a bad week on a show, everything seems to you'll lose a big title fight. Somebody will pull out on a big title. It has sort of that effect. Boxing is. It's a crazy sport, really. No other sport would be run like it. I've gone on many a times with the meetings at the board. They asked me to come and said I've got some ideas. Said they'd put them to the board. I ain't saying they didn't, but I just don't. It's not run like a professional sport. It's like football. They don't run it. I'm not. That's not against the board, because they're in to do a job. But I think if somebody got out of it, somebody and employed people as well to try and move the sport forward, boxing, at the moment, really it's run by the promoters, more the TV promoters, really, and the TV run it. Whereas football, yes, in a way, but it streams down a little bit to the other clubs.
Well, there's a FIFA, isn't there? There's no centralised governing body, is
no,
there?
No.
Or you've got the Board of Control, but you've also got New York State. There's
I don't even know how many commissions there are worldwide. It's just like, I wouldn't have any clue, but there's a lot. So there's no central governing body, is there? It's hard to govern, isn't it?
Yeah, but like where you got the Premiership football, they have to link in a little bit with the lower leagues. So, and even now to national, and so there's a little bit of money fed in, so they can try and keep them all going. Where they'd say, well, our fighters are getting, but that doesn't really help us.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think if they brought somebody in or people in who could promote the sport better and talk to TV channels and sat and like do.
Reinvest the money?
Well, I've always had a thing about, like, you've got area champions. Like, why don't they? Like, I'm sure TV would be interested if, say, London boxed Birmingham or Midlands, and their area champions boxed their area champions, and then manoeuvre through. They could probably get paid a bit better because it's on TV, and you'd see a bit of talent, and then they could pick. I just think there's things out there they could do with the sport, and like, you, which other sport would be? You could be number one in Britain, which I know because I've had number one in Britain, and they've get injured and they don't earn a penny for 18 months because they couldn't box. It wouldn't happen in football if there was number one in Britain, and it's just crazy.
Yeah, I really like that idea about the area title fights. I love an area title fight. I think they deliver more consistently good fights than probably any other title I've ever seen, because they're just, it's the first step on the ladder for some people. For some people, it's something they've been trying to get their whole career because they want that officially recognised title. And in York Hall, I've seen some amazing area title fights.
Doing the amateurs, well, Midlands, Bucks, Wales.
And they had that little Henry Cooper's thing one time, didn't they? They're on Ely Boxton. And like, but that's where, like, couldn't they could go in, they've got area boards, couldn't they get the areas to box? So they could be in a league table and they box, like, they've gone into darts with the Premiership, like, different, but like, it's just enough. And then perhaps the boxers then could be on a regular, knowing they've got regular fights, a regular, but it's just, nothing seems to get, it's just, the promoter's got his fighters. And yes, we get fighters on them, so we all earn off that type. But nothing else seems to get spoke about how the sport could progress in different ways. It just,
or at least try something different.
Yeah. It's up to the promoter, like prize fighter. It's good, and you could have one. But like, obviously, then you get restricted amount of shows, so prize fighter dips out the way. That was great for some of us to get through, like such as Martin Murray was on a small or one prize fight and ended up, you know, I think there's loads of stuff that could go, just we haven't got the people to do it for one reason or another.
If you were to show 4-10 rounders Southern Area champions against Midland Area champions, that'd be a good card, wouldn't it? You're going to have four evenly matched competitive,
no, that would be,
that's a good show,
yeah,
isn't
it? That is a good show. That is a good show.
And you'd probably sell, like the boxers would probably sell, and you'd probably get to the public a little bit.
Yeah.
And if you get a bit of support from, you know, networks, I think you could say, especially league tables and stuff like that.
They've always, you know, I suppose trying things like, there was, you know, the idea of a golden contract where there was, you know, 8 quarterfinals.
Yeah,
so
yeah, but what I'm trying to say is they're run by specific people.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? A specific promoter who's only going to still look after their own, in the end, their own people. They'll give you the odd. What I'm on about is somebody from a central running it for everybody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So everybody gets the chances.
Yeah, like, so. You know what I mean? If you were doing 4 Southern Area champions against 4 Midlands Area champions, it doesn't matter who those people are with.
It'd have a roll-on effect, because the small halls then could probably have to do eliminators just for their area champions, because they'd want to get onto that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know, things like that. Do you know what I mean?
And, yeah, yeah. We were talking about this a bit actually. The how there's just room for another kind of tier of stuff below the bigger pro TV cards, where you do have to make space for a prospect who's going to be in a fight that everybody knows they're going to win. And we all understand the point of that. And they're good to watch because they're good. But at the same time, whenever we've done area title fights, and I remember doing, we did an absolute belter, Adam Harper, Ryan Kelly, on that cracking night in Birmingham in 2016. And that didn't make it onto the main TV because it was an area title fight and there were other fights they needed to show. And we understood it, but at the same time, we knew that was going to be a really good fight. There was just no way it was going to be anything else.
So we know, years ago, there was, you know, if you're looking at America, there was HBO, and on HBO you had HBO pay-per-view, then you had HBO World Championship Boxing, you had HBO After Dark. So there's already three tiered shows, and there's be a different budget for each one of those. Then, so say you signed with Top Rank back then, in your contract it'd be, if you're on HBO pay-per-view, the minimum will be this. If it's, you know, After Dark, it'll be this. But if you're on Fox Sport, it'll be this. Because obviously there's a different budget depending on the television network you're on. So that's good, because it means that, like, everyone wants a fair deal. Everyone wants to think, like, well, you know, if there's a pie there and, you know, there's £100 in it and I'm the box one getting punched in the head, I want, you know, I should be in the lion's share or whatever. But if it's... do you know what I mean? But if it's not in the pie, well, then that's fair enough. I want a box. I'm happy to box for less than that if it's on a different television network that I understand isn't the same budget. But it's, you need that, because not every, if it's, you know, let's say Sky, for example, they're paying whatever they're paying for a show, but there's not an unlimited budget. So they've got unlimited funds, so they can only do so many of those shows a year. But then there's so many fighters that want to get out of box, but they'll sign with a television promoter because they want to be with the television promoter because they think that's going to be the best thing for the career. But a boxer wants it twice a year, because they can't afford to put them on. So they'd be better off signing with the promoter saying, oh, if I box on Sky, I get this and this, but if I don't and I have to, and I can't get on, well then you're going to guarantee me four other fights on a small hall, or maybe a small hall.
But then you've got to the boxers. You've got to cope with that as well, though. Do you know what I mean?
And what,
I've done it with a couple of mine, and they get, we only want to box on the telly ones.
That's one thing. And also, I suppose they're thinking, well, there's a show coming up in, I don't know, a couple of months, and I've got a good chance of getting on that. And if I get on that, I'm getting X amount. So I don't want to, even though I'm getting. I can stay busy and fight on a small hall show for nowhere near that money in a fight I should win. But what if I clash heads and get caught? Then I'm out of the one where I make money.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So it's like, there's not a clear solution.
No, there isn't. There very rarely is in boxing. I mean, I think that's one thing we all know. But the upside to that is that anything kind of seems possible, because there's no reason why you couldn't do it. But then getting into a position whereby everybody gets their heads together and agrees, that's the problem.
Getting people we're all so busy doing our different things in our own different areas, we just all whinge about things to a certain degree. Do you know what I mean? And so, but like, I think there's definitely somebody could get out there and do a good job with it as well. But like, for the sport, not just for, that's what it's got to be about, really, for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, we'll let you go. We've kept you for an hour. Just one final thing. Any good stories about Macklin on the West Midlands grapevine that we may not have heard on this podcast?
I don't think so, no. I haven't.
Oh, you fucking liar. Anyway, Errol, thanks very much. Like I said, we've been meaning to do this for a while.
It's always been sound.
It's been really good fun, this. Really good fun. Best of luck to yourself and Tyler tomorrow night. May the best man win and all that. And we'll see you again soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks.
And thanks for tuning in, everybody. We will be back soon. Like I said, we'll do our best to bring these to you every week, but certainly Macklin's Take isn't going anywhere. We're gonna keep it up and running throughout the course of the year. We'll see you again soon. Yes, that line forms on the right, babe. Not that Maggie's back in town. Look out, old Maggie is back. Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.